Welcome to Romance at a Glance. This is your host, Shawnee, and with me is my beautiful co-host, Bridget. Hi, Bridget. How you doing, girl?
I am doing great, Shawnee. I am ready for 2024 Romance at a Glance reading season.
Heck yeah, I'm ready to get back into it. It was a nice little holiday. You had a good little holiday?
I had a very busy holiday. Went to LA for 5 days, had a family wedding, then we flew home, then we had Christmas in Chicago, then my mom's 70th birthday in Chicago, and then we had like a million people staying at our house. It was a wild time. It was very fun. But I've definitely been coming down from the high of family gatherings for the last 2 weeks.
This just sounds exhausting. Didn't you guys get sick too?
We got COVID right before we left for LA. I like painted the kids' playroom and put up their new Jungle Gym surprise Christmas present. My daughter just broke her arm.
Bro, Bridget turned her entire playroom into a jungle gym.
It's awesome.
Mom win 10,000. Okay.
It's awesome. I love it so much.
Anyways, so today we're very excited because, you know, one of my favorite authors on the planet, we got to talk to Evie Dunmore.
Yeah, we did. You guys, Evie Dunmore is our first repeat author interview. Evie was one of the first authors that we interviewed all the way back for her debut novel. And now I felt like it was poetic to then be interviewing her and talking about book 4 in the series. And as always, Evie was a delight.
She's such a delight. I love Evie. I couldn't say enough beautiful things about her. And then the I think we said this the first time we interviewed her. This woman is gorgeous.
She's a smoke show. Evie, if you're listening, hello. I don't want to embarrass you, but you are outrageously beautiful. You are quite beautiful. Even on a Zoom, quite beautiful. And this interview is so interesting because her primary language that she's speaking in day to day is German, but she's writing in English. So it was a fascinating conversation that we had this time about how she translates those things in her mind that maybe in German are translating to something different in English, and how perhaps her writing is a little bit more direct. And if you don't remember, her first book was our favorite book of the year.
A
five-star read, and you know me and Shawnee do not just casually give out five stars. No. Five stars are an earned rite of passage. And so if you guys have not read the series, you definitely should. And the latest edition is very sweet, sort of culmination of the four friends and their journeys together. Shawnee, without further ado, I think we should just let the people hear Evie.
You guys have to hear Evie. So yes, let's get it popping, Bridget. Let's just get it popping.
Romance at a glance.
Uh-huh.
Romance. At a glance.
What you say now?
Romance. At a glance.
Go ahead, girl.
Romance.
Me. Yeah, it's so nice to see you. You were in our first like batch of author interviews. So when we started with just reviews, and then after about like 10 months, we were like, wouldn't it be fun to talk to some of these authors? And so we just sort of like just sent the word out to some publishers that we had gotten some books from, just being like, hey, we love your author. Hey, we love your author. Hey, we love your author. And we read your book. Shawnee's very into historical romance. And obviously, you know, we loved your book. It was our favorite book of the year for that year. And so it was so fun that we got to talk to you. And I'm excited that we're getting like part two, like 3 years later, now that you finished, this is the final book in the series coming out. So I'm excited that you're here. We'll revisit.
Same. I think you were one of the very first podcasts I ever did, and I had so much fun with you ladies. So when, you know, you asked whether I wanted to do one for the last book, I was like, that would be great. So
yeah,
seeing where we are, because you're still here and you're thriving. So that's amazing.
Same with you. I mean, we've done it. We've done it, you know? Well, how is it seeing, because we talked to you for your debut novel. So how is it now seeing like the series complete? Like you have it on your shelf. All four books are there. You've turned them in. What's that like?
Bittersweet. It's mixed feelings, honestly. I'm so glad I got to finish it. It's lovely to see it complete, but also a bit sad, you know, because these characters have occupied me since 2018. So that's 6 years of my life, and now it's done. And I think the other day I said something like, it's like seeing your best friends off to the Undying Lands and they're just sailing off without you. I'm staying back here and they go on to wherever, and it's almost a loss, you know. Mm-hmm. Imagine spending so much time with someone and then it's just over. So
yeah.
But on to new things. So it's also a good thing. Like every ending has this chance for a beginning. So
that's kind of interesting, because so I have ADHD, and it is the idea of object permanence is so hard for me, right? So out of sight, really out of mind. And I was thinking recently, like how every transition that I've ever gone through, I've been so like sad about, right? You leave college, you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to see, or like high school's better. You leave high school and you're like, I'm never going to see these people again. Oh my gosh. And then like, I don't know, 6 months later, you've forgotten that they ever existed. Maybe like one or two that come along with you. And so, but then every so often you remember, and then like you remember this for a minute and then it kind of goes away. And it's so interesting when you like write a book and you're sitting with these characters for so long, in your own mind, having conversations and everything else. And because that's so self-contained in your one body,
yes,
that it's one, it's wild, but two, when you sail them off, that's like, it's so strange to me because you're sailing off like a part of your own body.
kind of.
Like your own imagination, like what you've been sitting in your own imagination, you're like sailing. So I don't know, there's nothing to be said there other than that that's fascinating to my brain, that kind of idea, because you also choose when to do that.
True. It's fascinating to me too. I mean, I've written only 4 books, but since every book feels different, it feels like I'm still learning. I'm still at the beginning every time. So it hasn't become a routine yet in any way.
What do you feel like has changed writing wise from like writing book one to now, you know, completing this most recent book?
I think that the most significant change from a first novel to all the subsequent ones is that the first book you kind of write for yourself, because you don't have a deadline, you don't have a contract, you have zero expectations. When I wrote my debut, Bringing Down the Duke, I didn't even have the aspiration of publishing it. I just had on my bucket list, finish a story. And when these characters came to my mind, you know, and I decided to explore them on the page, I just really did it for the love of words and to get those characters out, because they really wanted to be out. I was doing it in my own time. That was kind of lovely. And when it was done and I gave it to people to read, and they said, you know, this reads like a publishable thing, and I eventually got it published, then everything changed. Suddenly it becomes very commercial. You know, you're writing on deadlines. You have to take suggestions into consideration from other people. You have readers who get in touch with you a lot, especially now in the age of social media, and they're very excited about the books. And then of course you want them, you know, to be happy with the subsequent books. So there's this expectation surrounding it that can add some pressures. And I think that's been the case with book two, with book three, and with book four. You, of course, had the whole pandemic going on. And here in Germany, restrictions were very strict for about a year and a half. So it was an interesting experience to write that fourth novel. And it was the last in the series, so there was some sort of melancholy in the background for me too, saying goodbye to the characters as I was writing. Yeah.
Did you feel like where book four and Katarina ended up is where you thought she would end up in book one? Because like you have a very strong through line through the four books of like the friendship and the suffrage movement, like really links all four of them together, like very strongly, which I love. Cause I think a lot of times in books, like as soon as someone meets a male character, especially in historicals, like all of a sudden their friends like disappear out of the book. So I love that the friendships like remain so strong. But did you feel like she ended up with like the person that you had in mind, or did that sort of evolve as you wrote the other books two and three?
So interestingly, her love interest, Katrina's love interest, Elias, he wasn't with me when I was starting, when I wrote Duke. I kind of knew a little bit about the love interest in book two. And I was, as I was writing book two, I knew who was going to be the love interest for book three. But so I think she definitely ended up where I saw her or felt she would end up. But I hadn't had her story planned out like the other three books while I was writing, you know, the first one. So that was interesting. I was learning as I went with that fourth book.
That's exciting to be surprised.
Yes. No, but I felt it made sense for her to really broaden her horizon, like kind of literally, and to end up in another country in the end. So,
and I really liked, one of my best friends from college is actually from her family, not her, she's first generation, but her parents are from Lebanon and they're Maronite Catholics too. So we went to her whole wedding and it was like beautiful. And so it was so fun to be like, oh, I understand like a minuscule piece of this culture after being around her family so much during college. So that was really fun. I really liked that because she said like a bookworm and like absorber of knowledge, that I love that all of their interactions, like she immediately like switches into Arabic and he's like, whoa, where did you learn to speak fluent Arabic? She's like, a book, obviously. Where else would you learn Arabic?
Yeah, she's definitely an audio, how do you say, autodidactic. She was alone a lot. And so she taught herself a lot.
I'm excited. Shawnee hasn't listened to it yet because we don't have the audiobook yet, but I'm really excited for her to listen to it because as I'm going through, I'm like, ooh, Shawnee's going to like that part. Ooh, Shawnee's going to like that part. It's such a fun part of me getting to read books first. Or one thing I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned before this that you don't speak English a lot anymore because you don't live in an English-speaking country. And how is it writing in English when that's not your like dominant language? Like, what is that process like?
It's weird, honestly, because I didn't really have a choice about it with these four books, because the sentences just came to me in English. You know, obviously, I lived in Britain for enough years for it to become kind of like a second language for me. Like during, I went there for university, so that's where I really mm-hmm. absorbed the language. And probably because the novels are set at Oxford, the setting just reactivated that part of my brain, and so it all came out in English. That said, I think sometimes I might have a different relationship to the language than a native speaker, and that might lead to me structuring a sentence differently or using a different word than a native mm-hmm. speaker would instinctively do. And there was a moment where I became very aware of that, and that was when I was at a writing conference and they had some workshop session going on, and you had to change a sentence from a benign sentence to a more spooky sentence. And it was something like, the girl walks into the woods, and they changed it. The creepy part was like, the girl runs into the forest or something like that. I was like, wait, where's the difference between woods and forest? Because in German, you don't have that distinction. It's all forest, because we have the massive forests, right? So it's always the creepy forest. And that was the first time where I became very aware of the fact that I'm probably missing tiny nuances left, right, and center. And on the other hand, because I have a slight distance to the language, maybe I'm more experimental with it, you know, and mm-hmm. have more fun with it sometimes. So I guess mm-hmm. it has its pros and cons, both for writing and reading it.
It's funny because you said earlier that when you wrote your first book, you're like, oh, my friend said this is publishable, right? And it was funny because in my own mind, I was translating it to like how I would hear that in my own, like within my own friend group, which would be like, Shawnee, this is good. Like you should publish this. Like I ran that sentence in my head because I thought it was funny, but I thought it was an interesting way that people told you like, hey, your book is good. You're like, hey, your book is publishable.
Yeah, I mean, the German way of communicating is, of course, much more direct than English, right? I've been written long enough to, when I'm there, kind of temper the directness, but it might come through in the writing too sometimes. I mean,
as I was reading this book, I was like reminded how much I love your writing style though, because I feel like sometimes people can, especially in historicals, get a little flowery. They can get a little long-winded in the descriptions. Things are taking forever. And I'm like, okay, people, let's keep this movie going, you know? And I feel like, I guess directness makes kind of sense because there's like your writing is so wonderful, but it's also concise. Like there's not like a whole bunch of paragraphs where I'm like, I didn't need that paragraph. That paragraph could go. And I like that because I like the story and the characters to keep on trucking and the plot to keep on trucking and also like the dialogue to keep moving. So that's kind of interesting that that could be like a piece of just speaking German, a perk of thinking in German. What would you say like the fascination of historicals is for people?
I think there's probably different reasons for different people why they enjoy it, right? I can tell you what my fascination with it, with historical fiction in general is. I think sometimes it's nicer to explore a contemporary issue through some distance. You know, to not deal directly with something, but to have it told almost like a parable or just in a different setting. Sometimes exploring the same issue in a different setting gives you a new perspective on things. And with the whole women's rights movement in an historical in the Victorian era, I feel for me, it's very interesting to find the parallels to the women's rights issues that we're still dealing with today and how long they've been dealt with, maybe how differently they've been dealt with back then, what has changed, what has improved in the way we're dealing with it, or in the way the movements go about it. But also to see that people have always been people, historical novels have to do similar amounts of world building as fantasy novels by, you know, getting all the details right and catching the zeitgeist at the time to make the world feel lived in. And for a writer, that's fun. But I also really enjoy reading it.
So. For me, historicals, so one, I 100% agree with you. And I kind of wonder, because Bridget, we talk about this a lot of times, like how if I read a contemporary novel, it's hard for me to suspend my disbelief, right? Because if something happens, I'm like, don't do that. What are you talking about? We don't do that. You know? We don't do that. But when I go to historicals, I love that there's like a set world. There are rules to this world. And I am okay to accept these parameters because I am in historical, where I couldn't accept those parameters in a contemporary book that's taking place in a city next to mine in a current day, you know? And there's a bit of predictability that I like, I think as a human, like the way my brain works, I like to know what those parameters are, and it almost feels a little safe in the reading for me. And so, like, because I was really thinking about it, I was like, what do I love? I've been reading them since I was, I don't know, 14. And also, like, there's a bit of taboo that I really enjoy from historicals. For instance, if I'm reading a contemporary novel and the guy is like super machismo or whatever, I'm like, no, not today. Take that somewhere else. But if I'm reading a historical novel and the guy has that machismo, I'm like, that's a little delicious. You know, like it's it's just like it's different in the context, you know. So I think that is like a big reason why I do like it. But I don't like it. I like the way you do it in that you're pushing. You're always pushing in your novels. And it's not it's just not what I've read before. And I love the way you write because of that. I'm like, yes, I want the historical, I want the predictability, but then I want some more.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed the approach.
Well, what is your favorite thing about Katerina, your most recent heroine?
I like that she likes books. I like that she's so bookish. You know, you could put her in a room alone with a bunch of books and she wouldn't feel alone. She'd feel well entertained. So I think that's really nice, that type of self-sufficiency in a way. But what I think I really appreciate about her is that she has, I'd say, pretty high levels of anxiety, sometimes more or less high functioning. And so she's afraid of going out of her comfort zones a lot. But she's trying to, regardless, you know, she's trying to rationalize away those fears, and she's trying to do whatever is necessary to push herself and to grow beyond certain limitations that she feels she has and she doesn't want to have, you know. So I like that she's brave in that sense, Because it takes a lot sometimes to overcome yourself. You know, when you have an irrational fear of something or you're creating barriers for yourself for whatever reason, then it takes a lot of effort to dismantle that. And she finds something that she thinks is worth doing it for, and she just goes for it despite the setbacks. So I like that.
I don't read a lot of characters that are like that, like high functioning anxiety. And that are actively just pushing against that, you know? And so I'm curious, like, what made it important for you to write a character who was doing that?
It wasn't really a conscious choice, to be honest. When my characters come to me, they always appear kind of as they are. It's not like that I sit down and construct them, you know? There wasn't a single character so far where I had to sit down and write a character profile thinking about what are the strengths. They need a weakness. It's not been like that. She just happened to be like that. And it was important for me to have her. So she doesn't get like a makeover, right? I don't think I spoil anything by saying that she doesn't get a makeover. It's not like she starts out as the shy wallflower and in the end she's the heart of the party or something. She's not like that. But her feelings about herself and her ease with the world, that is what changes. It's nice when that happens in real life too, right? So I wanted to do that for her. Yeah, that was important for me, that she feels happy at the end.
I love that, because it's definitely hard when we talk about it constantly, when a character takes a shift that we feel is way out of character for them. Either way, right? Because if the book starts with a character who is just like, is out there, is a fighter, is whatever, and by the end of the book, they're like meek and what happened So it's like, it's kind of like one of those like rules of the world. It's like, however you present the character, yes, we want growth, but that growth should definitely reflect, you know, like a sort of reality, you know.
Yeah, also change is kind of slow in real life, isn't it? And my novels don't cover a very long time span. They're usually a couple of months, and personally I don't think you can completely change things about yourself within a couple of months. I think you can set yourself onto a really promising journey and you can, you know, tell if you're on the right track now, but you'll always have some setback. It's a gradual thing, right? It's not like a linear upward trajectory and suddenly there your world is great, everything's perfect. I don't think it works like that. And Katrina also doesn't work like that. But I feel by the end of the book, she's faced a couple of things about herself, and that's always the great start, I think, to start cleaning up, you know. So
Oh man, my friend said something to me the other day. I hadn't seen her in a long time, and she knew me when I first moved to LA, which was like 10 years ago. And so we went out to lunch and she was like, oh my god, I love your look, I love what's going on here, all this whatever. And she does marketing, and she does marketing for like big productions, big plays, big, you know, whatever. So marketing is literally what she does. And by the end of it, we were like trading readings. So like, I'm very intuitive about certain things. So she asked me some questions and I was like telling her just a little bit. And then she gave me like a marketing read, and she went to like my Instagram and she looked at the pictures on my Instagram. And I used to have my head, like my hair, like shaved on the sides and completely square. Like you see my little chibi, like a flat top. And I think that's when I met you initially, that was how my hair was cut. And she was like, why are all the pictures of you looking like this? You don't look like this anymore. And in my head, I was like, well, I will. I'm going to cut my hair and it's going to look like that again. She's like, yeah, but that's like not what's happening here. And it was the first time that I went home and I sat with that for a minute. And I was like, who have I moved to in the 3 years, like pre-pandemic, 2019 to now? And I'm like, do I feel like that person? Do I feel like that? And I have been resistant to go back to that look, even though I love that look. I've been resistant to it. And I sat there and I realized, like, in these last few years, I've gone through some of the hardest things in general. And I'm waking up to the fact that I'm not her anymore. I'm just not her anymore. And I love that. I'm okay with that, because there's like a piece. There's like a piece that has settled. I just didn't realize it until that moment. And so I can viscerally understand that concept of just moving through and then getting to a point where you're like at peace with who you have become. So I think that's a lovely, and I think a lot of people have gone through a lot in these last couple of years.
Oh yes. Yep.
So I think there's a relatability there. That's awesome. That's really awesome. Are you still working with like the same team of people this entire time for all your books?
I am. And I've been quite lucky in that respect, because there were a couple of authors, especially throughout the pandemic, where editors changed halfway through the books. And that causes...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, for an author, it causes kind of distress, you know, because usually you've gotten used to your editor and you kind of, you can gauge where they're coming from, whether they get your characters or not, if they share your vision, all of that. And then you have to get that new relationship started while you're trying to write. So I'm very grateful that so far the team's been steady and continues to be supportive and amazing. So
I just thought to myself, you have such a relationship with your editor where you're talking back and forth. They're also reading the intimate scenes of your books. Like, there's gotta be such an intimacy in that relationship.
One of the things I learned very quickly when I, you know, became a published author is that agents and editors, they don't only need to know about books and the marketability, they also need to know how to manage a great, great author. And they're pretty good at that. I mean, my agent is brilliant. I don't know how many fretful, unhinged emails she gets every day from her from her bunch of authors. My editor, for sure, she is very good at taking the pressure off, or she's very good at not even creating any pressure, let's put it that way. She's very patient. I wouldn't call them therapists, because I wouldn't want to put that responsibility on anyone outside of a therapy office, to be honest. But they certainly are really good at managing the human component of the whole business. And I think they have to be, because writing is intense. You know, when it starts to go into the whole commercial world, there can be conflicts of interest, there can be differences in vision, there can be just self-esteem issues going on. And you need to manage all of that to get the product over the finish line. That's just part of the process. So having an editor I can trust is definitely extremely helpful. Or let's put it the other way around. If I had an editor that I didn't trust, I'm not sure I could be working with them, because you're trusting them with something that's very special to you, and it'll go out into the world with your name on it. So you can't have someone you don't trust working on that with you.
For sure. Also, you guys can't see her, but she just put her hand over her face when we mentioned the sex scene. So let's go there. How is it writing the sex scenes from like book one to now? Do you feel more comfortable, less comfortable? Do you feel like, you know, like how has that evolved for you?
You know, you would think that since you would think that with every book you have more of a routine and things become easier. But as I said in the beginning, every book is different and every couple is different and every couple has their different dynamic, which also means a different sex dynamic. So it's new every time. And I can't say that it's changed much in terms of, it's not easier. Certainly not. Perhaps because they all want their own special brand of sex scene. You know, if I were able to just take certain phrases and put them together again in a different order, and that's my sex scene, maybe that would be easier, but that's not how it works, at least not now. For example, in my third novel, Portrait of a Scotsman, you have Harriet as the main character. She's very bubbly, very impulsive. She's very extroverted and kind of a sensual person all around, you know. And then for her, it was very natural to impulsively talk about her consensual, non-consense pirate fantasies with her new husband, right? And to want to explore all of that, and they get kind of heated. But Katrina doesn't really work that way. She's very passionate and tense in her own way, but she's always overthinking what she will say. So I think her and Elia's sex scenes were just more, you know, tailored to their character and the pacing and everything.
Mm-hmm. So what you're telling me is book three has pirates.
Technically, no.
Like, no. But they appear somewhere.
It has a little role play.
They involve role play.
Fantastic. Yeah. Just make a note. Yeah.
Okay, so like, if you could have any character, any actors or whomever, like, that you feel like, ooh, that would be the perfect person to play Katrina and Elias, who would you think of?
Yeah, that's a difficult one.
And I gave you ahead of time so that you would have a moment to think of it, because on the spot, hard to do.
I know. So it's tough because, you know, it's tough to find someone who actually matches the vision in your head. Mm-hmm. So there's always a real life actors are always an approximation. So for Elias, I think there's a Lebanese actor. His name is Simi Merheb, and he could be him because he has the blue-green eyes and the dark hair, so that would match. But I think his vibe is different from how I imagine Elias, so that's, as I said, an approximation going by the physical. And I honestly have just forgot the actress that I felt looks close to Katrina. Let me look her up, because I have it on my Instagram, because a lot of readers have asked me who should play whom. So I thought, oh, I just posted on Instagram, and then Millie Brady. So her name's Millie Brady. She's got the blue eyes and the dark hair and has kind of like a Scottish look about her, maybe. So.
Nice. Oh, yeah, I know who she is. I could see that for sure.
You know, it's funny. I love seeing when readers make those like who should play who lists, because it gives you a glimpse into their mind. There's very few times that you can get a glimpse into somebody else's like head about what they see for a book. And when you're growing up reading, like as a kid, part of you just thinks that everybody sees what you are seeing. Right? You read a book and you're like, wow. And you're like, you're reading that exact same book and you're seeing the exact same thing. And it's like, no, not at all. You know? And so sometimes when I see the character lineups, I'm like, what? Really?
So the sheer diversity of Sebastian Devereaux that I got sent by readers when I did the whole who should play Sebastian Devereaux, I didn't think there was such diversity among blonde men. I honestly didn't. But I got everything from you know, like the Lestat, the new Lestat in the new Interview with a Vampire series, to completely soft looking or very, very masculine looking Sebastians. It was such a mix. And I thought the same thing that you just said. It's like, it's amazing how people's minds work, which is also one of the reasons why I'm hesitant to tell people this is exactly how I imagine them. I really would love for readers to just have their own image of things and to have them exactly the way they love it, you know? I don't want to tell them what is right and what is wrong, because I don't think that exists when you read a book.
Also, I realize when people make those lookbooks that I disregard entirely whatever the author tells me about the physical characteristics of any character. You can tell me he's blonde. You can tell me he's blonde. He's a brunette in my mind. You can tell me that he's jacked, and I'll be like, he's a little light. Like, I just immediately upon reading, if it's like, there is a man, right? I build one I want to see that day. Wherever my mind's at, I build them and disregard almost all of the other descriptions, like about physicality.
I think that's great, because that's what reading is all about. You have your own movie running in your head, or you have your own feelings as you read along. And I guess in a romance, it's important that you feel both characters are attractive to you, or if you self-insert into the main characters, you want, you know, the opposite partner, you want both of them to be attractive, the way you think is attractive. And that varies widely. And that's the beauty of books as opposed to a movie. You can make of it whatever you want. I think that's the biggest advantage books have over film. And yeah, I remember also instances of ignoring certain descriptions that didn't gel with my personal, checklist of sexy or whatever. And it's fine. It's good. I had a reader write to me like, I love Sebastian, but I have to tell you, I imagine him as a dark-haired man. I'm like, that's fine. Lots of people don't like a blonde hero for some reason. So it's...
I don't know why, but Bridget was like, but your partner was blonde. And I was like, I know.
Well, what have you been reading? Have you read any books lately that are just loving?
Yes, I have actually. So now that I finished Gambit, I have some more time to actually read books. So I did. And I personally really love the new Beth O'Leary that's just come out. It's called The Wake Up Call. I think it's Beth's O'Leary's most rom-commy book so far. I had such a fantastic time with it, and it's great for the upcoming season because it's set around Christmas. It's like a seasonal book, enemies to lovers, kind of cozy hotel setting. Think like a small town setting, but in Britain with a cozy inn, and then you have this enemies of to lovers vibe going on between the hotel staff. I liked it. It was fun.
I was like, I'm pretty sure I just got sent that book. I'm like, as you're describing it, I'm like, oh, I think I have that, and I'm getting sent that one. Okay.
I got sent a debut that I read a couple of weeks ago. It comes out in January. It's by Emma R. Alban. It's a debut. It's called Don't Want You Like a Best Friend. Personally, I had no idea that there was a Taylor Swift song title, but apparently it has something to do with Taylor Swift. But that's the title, Don't Want You Like a Best Friend. It's a Victorian historical romance, and it's a bit like The Parent Trap, except that you don't have siblings as the main characters, but two young lesbian girls who are supposed to find husbands in the season, and they're supposed to like help each other find husbands or something, and then, you know, you can make up the rest. It's really well written. I thought it was very notable, so I look forward for it to go out in the world in January. The other day I just finished a South Asian Emma retelling. The title is literally If I Loved You Less. And it's very cheeky, very quick paced. I really enjoyed it. It's by Amna Qureshi, and it's not her debut, but it's her first rom-com type novel. I thought it was really well done. And then I've just started a book I've been sent. It's called The Last Train Home by Elle Cook. She's a British author. And it starts kind of heavy. It starts with the how do you say the attack on the Circle Line tube in Britain in 2005, and there's kind of like a love story built around that. So it's a more heavy love story, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you for the recs. Well, guys, we'll put all the links to all those in the description, so you guys can make sure that you check out Evie's suggestions.
Listen, I'm gonna read books. Well, that you suggest, Evie, because I like your brain. I like your brain. And listen, I wouldn't tell you if I didn't. I would just be quiet, okay? But like, the way you write, the way you talk, like the way, the insights that you take are fascinating for me. And Bridget and I go back and forth about how we don't trust Goodreads. When whatever the rating is on Goodreads, we're like, y'all are lying. You are lying to us.
So do you trust BookTok instead?
No. We trust ourselves. That's why we're always honest in our reviews on here. We try our best to pick books that we will like. Like, we don't choose genres or subgenres that we know we will just hate. Because, like for instance, I would never choose, like, whatever, some niche that I'm like, I hate that trope, which means I won't like the book because I don't want to lambast a book. But we'll get lots of recommendations from different people. Sometimes we read a lot of debut authors, a lot of indie authors. And sometimes, unfortunately, you read a book you don't like. And so we say, hey, this didn't work for us. It might work for you if you like XYZ, but it didn't work for us. But I feel like, especially as I see a lot of bloggers and reviewers who give like only 5 stars, and I'm like, as much as I love books, they're not all 5 stars. Like, they can't be, you know, like some have to be 4. So yeah, we try our best. And BookTok, I feel like, I feel like, I mean, it's easy to get sold on a book on BookTok because you read like one line or one little page of a book, or someone gives you the premise and you're like, that premise is incredible. I'm going to go read the book. And so those books, like, you know, pick up very quickly. But no, I've been duped a few times. And also I had one where there were just no triggers that were published along with the book. And it was like a rom-com-y type sort of contemporary. And then like towards the last third of the book, all of a sudden there was like some triggering things. And I was like, oh, wait, oh, that people should have put that in their little, you know, like a comment, like FYI. Couple triggers will hit you on the back end of this rom-com that it feels like maybe shouldn't be in a rom-com, but yeah, TikTok's a wild game.
Yeah, I don't feel like I found a TikTok like author, like a reviewer, that aesthetic fits my aesthetic, because I followed a bunch, especially when we're picking different seasons, I'll go on BookTok and see what people are really loving and that sort of thing. And then I read them and I go, I don't know how this is, like, how this made a list, you know? And so I'm in desperate need of just, like, I was like, Shani, you just need to find people.
Gotta be you, Shani. It has to be you. You have to.
But, okay, this is the thing, and I don't know, sometimes I hesitate to say this, but, like, over the course of my life, but in the last 4 years, I've had just some of the heaviest things hit. Just the heaviest things. And I'm happy that I'm on the other end and that I made it out alive. Okay. That's how I feel. And so where I used to be able to read these cute little stories of, you know, whatever, and like suspend my, I can't anymore. I cannot read anything that feels vapid or doesn't have some substance to it. And it kind of sucks because sometimes I'm like, I just want to pick up a stupid book. Read a stupid book. But I can't. And I can't suspend that. I want to be, I tell people in real life, like friends, people meeting me, I say, hey, I don't have any capacity for small talk. I don't want to do it. I can't. I don't have the ability to mask anymore and pretend that I'm interested in dumb conversation. I don't. And that's how I feel about my books. Now I don't have the capacity to waste time reading something that I quickly really want to just DNF. So that's what's happened. And now I have to find recommendations from somebody who has that same kind of aesthetic. They want something out of their stories now.
Yeah, I get that. And good news is that there's books for every life situation, right? As you said, it's a matter of finding the right recommendations, but there's so much out there for every type of taste. And sometimes we also change again, you know, sometimes you get this feeling back of just wanting something light, like a light reading. So it's a matter of, as you said, finding the right books. And like, as you said, it's good to go through people whose reading tastes you trust or that gel with yours. Cause mm-hmm. Yeah, social media is very fast paced, and as you said, it works with one-liners that might not tell you everything about a book, but 100%. They are good for the short attention spans that we now have, right?
So, for sure.
For sure. That is two different worlds.
Totally. Evie, thank you again for coming back on the show. Hopefully when that next story percolates and makes its way into publishing, we can have a three-peat in a few years and we can check in on how you're doing.
That would be wonderful. Yes, let's do that.
Thanks for hanging in with us, romance readers. Head over to Instagram to continue chatting with us. We're super friendly. We want to cackle with you. We want to know what your favorite sex scene was. And we need more book recommendations. If you want to read along with us, go to our website, romanceataglance.com, to see what we're reading next. And we'll see you next podcast.